morning. Welcome to church. We're glad you're here to worship with us today. I'm Mary Johnson, and I'm the liturgist for this morning. And I also serve as the newsletter editor, and I've been a member here for 35 years. Our minister, the Reverend Kleber Van Zandt, is out of town. In our pulpit this morning is Tracy Howe Koch. Tracy is an active member of our congregation and one of the founders of the Missouri affiliate of Interfaith Power and Light, a national organization that works to bring a religious social justice response to global warming. And today she's also invited her woodwind ensemble, no strings attached, to add special music to our service. Everyone is invited to stay for coffee hour after our service in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, right through those doors behind me. And if you're a newcomer this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, that you'll fill out the visitor card that's found in the back of your hymnal and put that card in the offering plate. And if we have your contact information, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the activities and programs going on here at the church. And if you'd like to learn more about the church or about Unitarian Universalism, there is an information display in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other information you're certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbor and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. And now, if you have a short announcement for the good of the church, please come to the microphone.
Good morning, I'm Mary Weber, and Ethel Potts and I went to see Brenda yesterday. She's doing pretty well, all things considered, but she asked me, at least for a while, that people don't send her any more food. Her freezer and her refrigerator are absolutely jam-packed. However, she really can use some company. She's confined and probably won't get out of the house for quite a while yet. Also, she sent us with some plastic containers and some jars from folks who had sent food for her. So those are located, we just set them on the table out here. Second announcement, I know you guys don't want to hear this, but I am tasked with finding liturgists and ushers. So the sign-up sheet is back here in the worker room, and I really am looking for volunteers. Also, we're only doing this now for the second service, so it's real quick, easy thing to do for the church, and you get to listen to the service while you're doing it. So if you have any questions or concerns, just come and see me after church. Thank you.
I don't want to hit any instruments because my daughter's a violist, so I understand.
Hi, Robin Berkeley, and I wanted to thank everybody who donated stuff yesterday for Fourth Saturday Lunch. Kathleen and I were making soup with Catherine Chapman on Friday morning, and then serving people yesterday. It's sort of a sad note. We were short about 20 sandwiches, which really hits me in the gut. As I get people coming up to me and saying, you have nothing left, and we didn't. So anyway, I just wanted you guys to know that we do really need, when we put a call out, we really do need people to step up. If we can, please. And certainly, if you're going out to Aldi's or the grocery store to grab a box of granola bars, if I'd rather us have a little bit of extra and then use it in a different way rather than being short, because short is not good, you know, for the people who really need the help. So, thank you.
Just a reminder, turn your phones on to either airplane mode or off so we don't get these big pops that are coming in. We had the issue last service, and so I want to make sure this service that we please turn them off or on airplane mode. Thank you.
If there are no other announcements, I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitudes or joys or milestones you may bring with you to church this morning, and there will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
Hi, I'm Honor Dimmick, and on Thursday and Friday, I went to a Model United Nations, and I got an award for representing Japan.
Hi, my name is Marcy Bennett. My daughter Brianna did very well at Solo and Ensemble yesterday. And also, we've welcomed a permanent new member of our family, Miss Alana. She's in the nursery because she didn't want to come to church. Her adoption was finalized about 2 weeks ago, so she's permanently going to be with us.
Looking to see who I know here. I'm Nancy Copley. I'm sitting with Ronnie Schoenburn, who's been coming here since 2006. Is that right, Ronnie? And she, it was difficult this winter, difficult for me too to get out and get around. So she's moving to Houston in 2 weeks from today, and we're going to miss her, and we're going to hope she enjoys Houston. Her daughter lives down there. So say hello and goodbye to Ronnie before you leave.
Hi, my name is Roger Landreth, and my mom and I finally got off our lazy butts and started going to church today.
I now invite you to move to the microphone to share briefly any sorrows or concerns you may bring with you to church this morning.
Good morning, I'm Erin Vigneau-Dimmick, and I just wanted to ask you all to hold in the light. Brigham and I have a colleague whose mom, she had a fall several weeks back and fell very, very ill because of it. And this morning they're gonna take her off a respirator. So just to hold them in the light and passing through this journey, thank you.
When I went to the party, I'm Sam. When I went to the party probably like 1 or 2 weeks ago, what was it? Anyways, I lost something, and I don't know if it's still here or not, but it will be on the ground, I guess. Something that's gonna look like this. And if you find it, just let me know, please. Thank you. And I'm sorry about whatever just happened.
I have a concern. Our daughter-in-law, Sophie, flew to the Ukraine last week to visit family for a short time. She flew into Kiev, where her relatives picked her up, and fortunately, the airport is away from the city, so she didn't have to encounter any of the rioting and fighting going on. And her family's village is about 5 hours away from Kiev, but she is concerned about not knowing what will be happening in Kiev when it's time for her to come back later this week. And so she's trying to find a flight out of a different city in the Ukraine, but the nearest largest city with international airport is Kharkov, where the president of the Ukraine has just gone to. So we are concerned that there is going to be growing unrest in that city too. So please hold Sophie in your thoughts. May the gratitude among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared become a load lightened. And the prelude begins our worship service as Sam Berkeley lights our chalice. Thank you. As children of the earth and sky, we are nurtured, sustained, given warmth and light from above and below. Supported by earth's strong, firm crust, we build our homes, till the fields, plant our gardens and orchards. When we turn from self and seek to be aware, we will find holy light in human faces, in blossom, bird song, and sky. Then earth is truly our home, and we are one with all earth's creatures. Let us worship together. Our first hymn is number 1060 in the Teal Hymnal, as we sing of hope and joy. Please rise as you are in body and our spirit. Join in the responsive reading found in the handout that you were given. Setting ourselves to the task to care for our earth, together we promise these things. We will start with one step forward toward the thriving world that we envision. deep problems call for religious answers. Recognizing the depth and urgency of the environmental crisis, we must answer the Earth's call to our spirits. Realizing that we have been too concerned with consuming things now, we must turn our attention to the future. Acknowledging the Earth most basically as our home, we must set about the task of restoration.
In this, our foundational home, we will find small and large ways to remember the environment in our worshiping, our learning, our celebrating, and our justice making.
Aware of the urgency and complexity of our environmental crisis, we end by promising simply this. Be seated. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of this church. The morning's offering will now be given and received.
Hello. I would like to welcome the children to come up here, please. Should I take this mic? I see ya. Come on down. Come on down. Come on down, Graham. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the music and the words. Did anybody pick out any certain theme of what today's topic is? Anybody paying attention to the songs? No? Go for it, Kelvin. Yes, perfect, environmentalness. That is exactly what it is. What are the three R's of environmentalism? Yes, and actually the order is reduce, reuse, and recycle. Does anybody know why it's that order? There's a very specific reason. It does sort of rhyme, yeah? Very close, very, very close. I would say he's on the right track. So first you want to reduce. What does that mean? Yeah, kind of stopping. Like, do you need 5,000 Pokemon cards? Probably not. Well, maybe some of you do. I shouldn't say that. Some of you are big collectors, so I'll leave that. Graham? Music? All right. Yeah, she's right over there. All right. Music makes you very happy. I like that. It makes me happy too. So first is reduce, and then the next, if you can't reduce, if you can't, you know, if you do have to get something, the next is reuse. What does reuse mean? Yeah, use it again. Yeah, exactly. Do we always want to use things again? Sometimes it's fun because something's shiny and new and you really want it, and this one's kind of old and grimy. Perhaps it's a book or something. But it's very important to reuse those things because you don't actually always have to buy something brand new. And then what is the final one? Recycle? And what does recycle mean? So you're basically, if you give it to somebody else, you're recycling and somebody's reusing your stuff, right? Perhaps you give your clothing away, or you have a younger brother or sister or a cousin, or you have toys, or you give them to Goodwill, or you could bring them to church for other folks to use. And then what is the absolute last step if you can't do anything else? To the heap. That's right. What happens at the heap? It does. And do we like looking at big piles of garbage? You do? Sometimes it can be fascinating, but really, sometimes it gets kind of smelly and kind of yucky, and then kind of, for me, it gets very sad because it's taking up space where a park could be or something like that. So really, that's our absolute last choice. And that's why I feel it's really important for you always to think about the three R's whenever you look at something or whenever you do anything, because things don't ever just go away forever. There's always a place for something. And whether you want it to be reused or you want it to be in a landfill, it's important to think about those steps. All right? All right, so I guess you guys are going to class. What does Kleber always say? Have fun and learn something. Talk to you folks later. Wait for everybody to leave. Our first reading today is from Andrea Cohen Keener. She's the director of Interreligious Echo Justice Network, and this is from her book, Green Faith. The spiritual challenge of a mountain of garbage may not be readily evident. I learned this connection from my neighbor, Jack. After the birth of my daughter, I was in the front yard enjoying a sunny day when I saw that neighbor Jack was throwing out some bottles. At the time, I was participating in a voluntary recycling program, which meant that I saved my reusable stuff, and when the pile threatened to take over the mudroom and spill into the kitchen, I carted it all down to the dump. and here was neighbor Jack, carelessly throwing his bottles away. I was sad, I was angry, I was afraid. Jack's wanton act of waste were endangering my planet, my babies. Why I had a good mind to march right over there and what? Shame him? Rage at him? Jack was not an evil or destructive man. I was shocked at how destructive my rage felt. I realized that there was very little I could repair by marching over to Jack's house in this condition. What if I offered to Jack to take his bottles with me next time I went to the dump? That would build community and reduce waste. That would be an act of caring for creation and loving my neighbor as myself. That was the moment I first knew that there is a spiritual component to the very concrete environmental challenges we face. I now invite you to sit back and relax, and we'll have a moment of meditation. We hold the earth. We hold brothers and sisters who suffer from storms and droughts intensified by climate change. We hold species who suffer. We hold world leaders delegated to make decisions for life. We pray that the web of life may be mended through courageous actions to limit carbon emissions worldwide. We pray for right actions for adaption and mitigation to help our already suffering Earth community. We pray that love and wisdom might inspire my actions and our actions as communities, so that we may, with integrity, look into the eyes of brothers and sisters in all beings, and truthfully say, we are doing our part to care for them and the future of our children. May love transform us and our world with new steps towards life. Amen. My sermon topic today is called The Time Is Now, and you might have noticed, as with the children, that it's a very heavily environmentally themed service today, and it's something that I'm very passionate about, and I hope to inspire you a little bit today. When I was a senior in high school, way back in 1991, which honestly doesn't seem so far away, I wrote my senior thesis on the devastating consequences of chlorofluorocarbons. Anybody remember those? Show of hands. Thank you. They were one of the main components of aerosol cans. Those of us who grew up in the 80s were most familiar with them through our copious use of hairspray. Unfortunately, our big hair was causing a large hole in the ozone layer, and this was stressing me out. All I could think about was that we would all die of skin cancer and burn up with the sun's intensified rays. Perhaps I was overacting a little bit, but this really did consume a great amount of my brain power at the time. I have no idea why. I, a typical Midwestern teenager, raised by very conservative parents, was so obsessed with the environment, but I was. Perhaps it was because growing up in Iowa, I was constantly deluged with weather reports and how it would affect the corn crops. And I'm not kidding about this. This is, anybody else from Iowa, they will remember this. The evening news always had a segment relating the lack of rain, too much rain, early frost, late frost. Every single weather condition you can imagine was talked about. And surely the very devastating consequences they would have on all our livelihoods. I don't ever recall a weather forecast where they actually said, all is perfect and we will live to eat another day. Never heard that. So it was shocking when I moved to St. Louis and discovered that most people don't even give a second thought to the weather. Mostly they think of the weather in terms of, do I need an umbrella today? Or maybe it's a little icy out because St. Louis and Illinois, we get a lot of ice, but never in relationship to how the crops are doing. Did they not understand that our survival depends on the jet stream? It was mind-boggling to me at the time after being so enmeshed in this. Additionally, every science and biology class in school would talk about the rapidly decreasing topsoil that had made Iowa the breadbasket of the United States. My apologies to anybody from Illinois and Indiana, because Iowa really is, and that's what we were told. Still. And currently, though, the estimate stated that Iowa had gone from 45 centimeters of rich topsoil to just 15 centimeters of topsoil. And as added visual aid, many of the biology teachers would bring in a large jar, and they would show, this is how much topsoil Iowa had. This is how much we were projected to have. Pretty soon it will be like this. And for a very impressionable child that I was, all I could think about was, oh my God, what are we going to do? This is bad, this is horrible, and the weather reports were telling me everything was bad. So it was very intimate connection between what the environment was doing and what we were doing to the environment. It did not take, on top of that, they also would talk about the quality of the soil and the miracle of fertilizers and pesticides, because as the topsoil was decreasing, so were the use of pesticides and fertilizers, which, you know, kept the crop levels the same. You know, they do serve a purpose. They do make yields much higher, but they also had the devastating consequences of ruining, poisoning the soil, and the runoffs poisoning the rivers and the lakes. So, you know, it's a fine balancing act. But as a kid, though, it did not take a great leap of my imagination to tie together that without soil, there would be no farms. Without farms, there would be no need for tractors. Therefore, my dad, who worked at John Deere, would not have a job. And worst of all, there would be no food. And I like food. I liked a lot of food. The connection between the environment and our well-being was very well impressed upon me at that early age. What really sealed it for me, though, was when I took a more active approach in environmentalism was when I went to Germany and Austria for my high school German class trip. Everywhere we went, there was, and this was probably in 1989, somewhere around there, 88, 89, there were special three-sided green garbage cans, one for glass, one for cans, and one for general waste. To my 15-year-old perspective, this seemed like genius. Why were we not doing this? This was fascinating to me. Not only one or two people were interested in this topic, like where I had grown up, but a whole country was behind these garbage cans, and it was mesmerizing to me. My second surprise was going to a grocery store, of which I purchased something, and then they actually asked me to pay for my bags. That was a second shocker, because in my mind, as a right of the consumer to get a free bag. Don't we always get bags when we go somewhere? And it was the first time I'd encounter a situation where, no, that's not a right, actually. If you want to use a bag, you pay for it, because this is actually costing us something. This is costing the environment, so therefore we're going to pass this on to you. It was a very eye-opening experience to me, and that's why I really will always be for travel, because you really just learn so much. I was quickly frustrated when I returned. Where to begin? I was just one person in a country that was not all that interested in what I had to say. I did what I could. I joined Earth Clubs, recycled, cut out the CFCs, had flat hair, talked to whoever would listen, but overall felt I was pretty ineffectual. The only reason my parents recycled cans was because Iowa paid for them, not through any sort of environmental activism. And that's really what a lot of Iowa was at the time and still is. Pros and cons to that, but you know, it got people recycling whether or not they felt a conscience to do that. I just couldn't understand why people didn't care. Didn't they want the best for their families? Didn't they want clean air and water? Didn't they want to continue to enjoy all the beauty and the resources the earth has to offer? What is wrong with these people? Don't they see how right I am? Perhaps my self-righteous lecturing wasn't the best motivational strategy at that time. Really, though, there are a lot of reasons why people don't take a greater role in caring for the earth. Some of them don't see it as an issue. Some have greater priorities in their life. Others feel it's not their responsibility, or that science will discover a solution to all their problems. Today, though, I want to discuss another common reason. Many faith groups feel that our presence on earth is just a passing phase. We are merely enduring our human form until we move on to heaven or some other plane of existence. With that framework, Earth is not all that important. We can pollute it, use up its resources, change its climate, and who really cares? Earth is temporary. It is only something for humans to use on their way to greater things. Because of this egocentric view, the Earth and all of its inhabitants have greatly suffered. It has been speculated that the next mass extinction is upon us, and human interference is leading the cause. I find this train of thought to be particularly depressing. Next to China, US is the greatest polluter of CO2. Carbon emissions are one of the largest causes of climate change. This is fascinating. With close to 80% of Americans claiming some sort of religious affiliation, this is a huge group of people that could have an impressive impact on advocating for the climate. Every major religious denomination has a statement on environmental stewardship. From Judaism, Catholicism, Baha'i, and yes, even evangelicals, the leadership within these groups have recognized that it is the moral duty of people of faith to take care of God's creation. Unfortunately, there is a huge disconnect between what is determined to be religious responsibility and actual action. As Unitarian Universalists, it is part of our seven principles, which is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. We come from a long tradition of environmental stewardship, and that makes me very proud. We need to continue to step up that effort and be a positive role model for other denominations who are only beginning the process. Whether your faith is in a god, goddess, or the energy of the universe, we have a moral obligation to take care of each other and our environment. I recently participated in a panel discussion regarding the need for Ameren, which is the energy company on the Missouri side, to transition from coal fire plants to clean energy. This event was sponsored by Metropolitan's Congregations United and was held at a South St. Louis County church that was being directly affected by the pollution from the Merrimack coal fire plant. It was to be an informative evening to not only discuss the plant, but to also discuss the moral and faith-based dimension to it. Unfortunately, the audience chose to debate the scientific merit of the arguments and then completely ignore any sort of faith-based moral reasoning. As entrenched audience members continued to drown out the panelists' efforts to be neutral and to only share the facts, it became painfully aware to me how far we still need to go, both in scientific and religious understanding. It boggles my mind that even though 90% of the world's scientists agree that the climate is changing and that is most likely caused by humans, there is still a significant portion of the U.S. population that continues to deny that it is happening. Whether or not you agree with the science, you know things aren't like they used to be. One just needs to look around and see the increase in droughts and floods, superstorms, severe weather, and to realize something is different. When I was in school, we often talked about the precautionary principle, which is even if there's a remote chance that something might be true, precautions should be taken. What is the worst that will happen? Our air gets cleaner, our water safer, more jobs in the clean energy sector, food that we feel safe eating that is not destroying the ground on which it's grown. None of these sound tragic to me, and all seem very worthwhile goals. Putting the science aside, though, as people of faith, it is the ethical duty to take care of each other. The people most affected by climate change will be the ones least able to adapt. Most of us are fortunate to be able to afford air conditioning, heat, insurance, and the eventual higher food prices. This is not the case for everyone. We have all heard the stories of folks afraid to turn on their air conditioning or heaters due to the costs, and then have suffered tragic consequences. As we see through our fourth Saturday lunches, there are many food insecure families within our communities. Climate change will only exacerbate these conditions. Scarcity and costs will only increase, and the most vulnerable will be the ones who suffer the greatest. As I speak, there are whole islands disappearing with their populations being forced to relocate due to rising ocean waters. Imagine all of Manhattan having to move. That's what's going on. We have a moral duty to help our brothers and sisters. Combating climate change is one important step in the process. As Unitarian Universalists, many of us already take significant steps to be more environmentally friendly. We recycle or use public transportation, we garden or utilize solar panels, and try to reduce our consumption. We do what we can, but is it enough? I currently help run Missouri Interfaith Power and Light, as Mary noted in the beginning. It is the state affiliate of the national group Interfaith Power and Light, and it is not a utility company. It's often confused for that due to the name, but it is not. Their mission is to help congregations of all denominations become more energy efficient through connecting their beliefs with stewardship of the planet. By coming together, congregations not only support each other in decreasing their carbon footprint, but advocate to help change on the national and state levels to be more environmentally friendly. While we are new to Missouri, many states already have very active affiliates. For instance, Kentucky Interfaith Power and Light helped organize a massive I guess faith walk you would call it, in Louisville, Kentucky this summer during General Assembly. It was about, I was part of that, it was about 2,000 UUs all marching to help bring attention to fossil fuel extraction in the Kentucky area. It was really powerful. It was powerful to see that many people, and other faith groups were also invited. So I think in the total ended up being about 3,000 people there. Illinois IPL, who works under the name of Faith in Place, provides extensive programming and advocacy for Illinois congregations, and they are really a model. They're one of the earlier founded groups, and they're a model program in the fact that they just provide extensive help and programming, mostly in the Chicago and Springfield area, but they're willing to help out everywhere. I was lucky enough to hear their executive director speak, Claire Butterfield, at a district assembly that was in St. Louis probably 6 or 7 years ago. And after I heard her speak, I'm like, why are more people not doing this? And it's been a long road to get us going in Missouri, but we're finally here, yay. This past fall, Missouri IPL, which I participate in, we sponsored a faith walk along with the Sierra Club and some other religious groups, and we had a walk down by Ameren's headquarters protesting their use of the coal fire plants and asking them to transition to clean energy. We're not asking them to shut down, we're just asking them to think about where their source of their energy is coming from. And it was a very well-attended event. The National IPL offers many programs to assist affiliates and congregations in their greening efforts, such as Cool Congregations, which is a program to help increase energy efficiency. We are not the only ones in an older building. It's often very hard to decrease or increase your energy efficiency in a building that's older. So we run programs to help people do that, and the National IPL also has a Cool Harvest program, which encourages people to eat locally because food systems are a very integral part of climate change, and eating locally is one of the best things you can do. Additionally, last weekend and this weekend, congregations all across the U.S. are participating in a national preach-in to combat climate change. All of us are preaching on the same topic, hopefully galvanizing people to stand up and make a change. This is just the beginning. As more and more faith groups start making the connection between human behavior and religious duty, real change can be made. We are at a turning point in human history. We can continue on our current path or seek new ways of living. Nobody is claiming this will be easy. I shared that one summer I was committed to hanging all my clothes outside to dry, which many people already do, but I had not done. And it's work. It's not easy. It requires planning. But it was worth it. It was worth it in the end. Not only in my energy bill was dramatically decreased because I'm a household of five, and the amount of laundry is pretty tremendous, but it just felt right. And it was one small step that I could take and that a lot of us could take too. We are currently on the easy path, but it really will be ending soon. Together though, through supporting each other's efforts, we can forge a new way, a way that protects all of Earth's inhabitants. In your order of service, you will find a postcard I think most of you already saw. While I understand the wording is not typical UU wording, it is wording that captures a lot of denominational groups, and that's why creation care maybe isn't the first choice of words you would use, but using creation care or earth stewardship, earth ethics, those are all jargon, I guess you would say, that it's used within this field, and they just happen to choose those phrases. But I ask you to please consider filling it out and mailing it to your senator. We are not the only church doing this. This is happening across the United States. And it would be wonderful to have senators' offices flooded with postcards from people who care, people of faith, and people trying to take a stand. So I invite you, and I believe I have more postcards somewhere, so if you need some more, let me know. Remember how I started the talk with the chlorofluorocarbons? In 1991, the ozone hole was getting bigger every single year. The outlook was bleak unless something was done right away. Thanks to the efforts of a vocal and loud group of activists, CFCs were eventually banned and phased out. And guess what? The ozone hole has shrunk to 2% of what it used to be. When we put our mind to it, we can make a difference, despite the odds stacked against us. Please be that loud and vocal activist. Make change happen. Take a stand and set an example. Only good things can come from it. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks. I invite you to stand if you feel like it and are able, and sing hymn 1066, O Brother Sun. Let us go forth into the world through a door of hope for the future. Remembering these words by Martin Luther, even if I knew that tomorrow the world would go to pieces, I would still plant my apple tree. So may it be with us. Thank you.